Turuntuset tulee jo on äl.
And our main topic today will be trade in services. And to introduce it, I would briefly say that trade in services has been in focus and new theories have been created about it during the last, 10 or 20 years already. But I would like to start really from the beginning. And can you please, Juan, explain us why is international trade in services important to talk about?
Okay, certainly. I'll be very delighted to talk about this. And as you have probably mentioned, it's to many, it's a rather new phenomenon. And some people might not have a full understanding of it yet. But in actual fact, we'll go through some examples and you'll find out that it is very safe to say that almost every one of us is part of the international trading services. So I think I'll start by giving you a couple of examples.
Very good.
And then we can go through the examples and see how the services are traded. So I guess the first example will be if you take a flight from Tallinn to Brussels and you fly with Brussels Airlines. And then after your arrival, you stay with a hotel in Brussels. And then, for example, if you're a consumer in Tallinn, you go to IKEA to buy your furniture, or you go to Carrefour to buy a kilo of salmon or apples. And the furniture or apples are shipped from Finland or from other European countries to Estonia on a Finnish ship container. And there are other examples. For example, if you go to the theater to see the latest Hollywood movie, or you download a song or a game on your iPhone, and you make a payment with PayPal or Google Wallet. And if you are very unfortunately have a problem with making the payment or running the game on your phone, you call Apple's service center, which might be located outside of Estonia. And to save the money, you make the call with Skype or with other instant messenger services. And well, there are many, many examples. I could go on and for example, if you're an Estonia company, you would hire a management consultant who flies from other countries to Estonia to provide advice. Or if you are installing telecom equipment, you would ask an engineer from the equipment provider to fly into Estonia to install the equipment. And even like, for example, in preparation for this radio show, if you were using Google or using YouTube, or searching online, I would say that all of these are examples of trading services. That's a very bold statement, but it's actually how the services trade is classified in international trade rules.
So there are more trading services around us than we really can imagine if we don't know or if we don't go into the topic more deeply.
Well, certainly. All of these examples that I've mentioned just now are daily life examples, the things that we do every day. So it's not that trading services is done by specialists or people in the trade. It's we're all part of services trade, and whether you recognize it or not, but it's already become part of our daily life.
What are the main growth areas in international trade and services? What you have seen or noticed during the recent years happening?
Well, if I may, maybe we can just, I would go through the different ways in which services are traded.
Of course.
To provide a better understanding of why I'm saying that all of the examples that have been mentioned before are trading services, because, it might appear to some people, why if I'm located in Estonia, I'm located in Italy, I'm going to Carrefour, I'm buying a kilo of apple, it would be counted as a service trade. That sounds pretty strange.
Yeah,
right?
It needs some explanation. I agree with you.
Yes. So before we go into the growth areas, I'd like to briefly touch upon how services are traded and why the examples that I've been given are services trade. So basically, all the international trade, the multilateral trading system is the rules of multilateral trading system is governed by the World Trade Organization. And World Trade Organization has this agreement called the General Agreement on Trading Services, which lays out the rules which international trading services are conducted. And according to General Agreement on Trading Services, services are traded in four ways, four means of delivery of services. The first, or four modes, as we call them. The first mode is cross-border supply. Cross-border supply would mean that the service supplier and service consumer is located in a different countries and service is supplied across the border through, for example, telephone or internet. So typical examples would be if you call a call center, as I've just mentioned in the beginning, if you have a problem with your iPhone, you call a call center, and the call center, if it's located outside of Estonia, you're actually a consumer of the call center service. That's mode one. And mode two would be the consumer moves outside of the country, for example, as in the example which I started with. If you go to Brussels and you stay in a hotel in Brussels, basically you are consuming hotel service in Brussels, and that will be counted as the export of Brussels to Estonia. That's mode two. And mode three will be commercial presence. So the service is supplied through the commercial establishment in a foreign country. In this case, if you're going to Carrefour to buy a kilo of apple, you are consuming, you're buying, not only buying apple, you're actually also consuming the distribution service provided by Carrefour, which is a foreign company. So the sales of Carrefour would also be counted as services trade in this case. And finally, the last mode, as we speak, would be the movement of natural persons, which would be the case where you hire some management consultants from a foreign country, fly them in to Tallinn, treat them well, they'll provide advice. So they temporarily move from their home country to Estonia and to provide a service, and that will be recorded as an export of that country and import of Estonia. So basically we have these four different modes of supply, which is much a wider range of the ways which services are traded than compared with goods. Because goods trade essentially is traded in one way, which is the goods is delivered cross-border, right? So across the customs, and but for services trade, we have very different ways to measure them, and very different ways to deliver the services.
Out of the four modes you just mentioned, what are the largest areas, and what are the biggest growth areas?
Okay, out of these four modes, according to the statistics of the pretty recent WTO statistics. Mode 1 and 2 would account about 20 to 25%. Mode 2
altogether or each?
Well, sometimes it really depends. For some services, especially online services, it's difficult to distinguish mode 1 and 2.
That's true.
You are, for example, if you are opening, it will be difficult to distinguish if in the country and you're consuming a service which is supplied through another supplier in a foreign country, or you are actually virtually moving yourself to, you know, to the server of the country where it is located to consume that service. Maybe I didn't make it clear. It's mode one basically would account for 20 to 25%, and mode two would account for about 15 to 20%.
Okay.
And mode three, which is commercial presence, which is, you know, the sales revenue of foreign established service suppliers in the country where they supply service. This is the largest chunk. This would measure about 50 to 60%. And mode four, which is the movement of natural persons, has a very limited share. It's only about 2 to 3%, basically, because you know, the movement of natural persons is still quite restricted in many countries, because due to the visa and immigration issues. So this share is trade is pretty limited, but by all means, commercial presence will be the largest chunk of the international trading services.
Is the commercial presence also increasing fastest, or are the two first, cross-border supply and consumption abroad, increasing faster, if you look at kind of percentage-wise?
If we look at percentage-wise, even though the mode three, which is service supplied through commercial presence, has the largest bit of the international trade, mode one and two, and sometimes we say them combined together, would have the greatest growth potential, because this is the mode where trade is done through internet. This is the area where the new developments, look at our daily life, you know.
It's the easiest way, I understand. It's the easiest way to export services.
It's the new way.
It's sort of the new way, because we didn't have this before, right? We didn't have iPhones 10 years ago.
Probably not iPhones.
I'm not sure when Apple started to sell their phones, but the smartphones wasn't a big hit 10 years ago. And nowadays, people download music, download apps on their phones, and all of these are counted as international trading services, and they're recorded in mode one trade. So all of the services delivered via internet would be the fastest growing part of the services trade. And if I go to the figures, that's actually a newly released report from the WTO, World Trade Report 2014. Indeed, it says that computer and information services in 2013 has grown by 10%, which is the fastest growing sector of among all other sectors.
Does it seem to you also, but for me, it seems that in those new sectors, what we could tell that are traded by internet, there are new companies, new people are doing this kind of business. And everybody who had this, their old services, they are not so eager to change or to move to those new places, or it just seems to me like that.
Well, I think it's to a certain extent it's true, because, you know, people always used to do things that they are most comfortable with, and there's always this inertia and which prevents people from moving into the new sectors. And certainly that's also, in other terms, we call it the cost of adjustment, because the new sectors emerge, and somehow, you know, if you have newborn things, some old things die out. And people, for example, 20 years ago, people used using pagers to make a contact. There's no paging machine anymore, and fax machines are dying out as well. And also the news agencies are moving from papers to their internet portals. So sometimes with the new technological development, there's this adjustment costs, but in most cases, I guess people cope with them quite well, because new things also mean greater opportunities. And in many new sectors, the salaries are higher than the old ones.
If you look at the report, are there any stars, if I mean that, the countries who really have increased fast the kind of, maybe not internet, only internet or electronic services, but still the kind of the area one and two about cross-border supply and consumption abroad that belong there? Are there any countries who really do exceptionally well, or who are before the others?
Well, exactly. I mean, there's certainly some countries which are very outstanding in providing this, in getting the most part of this opportunity that came with internet and came with the IT boom, and also with the business process outsourcing, BPO. The most talked about country would be India. India's software services exports have increased 11-fold, which is 11 times since 2000, since the year 2000. And India has become a very big player in IT services offshoring. It provides about 60% of the global offshoring services. So, you know, it happens sometimes when you call if your washing machines break down or your TV break down, you call and you would have noticed a bit of accent from that part of the world. So, but of course, call centers, they have done a lot of trainings, the accent adjustments to provide better service. But India definitely is a big player in the IT and the BPO services. There are some other countries, for example, Ireland, which is another big star in providing the IT-based service. Philippines, Malaysia, Costa Rica, they're all catching up very quickly in providing, in doing services exports through IT services and BPO services.
But what's behind it? Why they're growing faster than, for example, Estonia here?
Well, there are many reasons. Services is more different. I think the service is certainly very different from goods trade, manufacturing. China is a very big player that we call World Factory. It started with industrial policies which are very much tilted towards encouraging manufacturing sectors to produce for exports and attracting FDIs in the sector. So these are the policies which incentives which encourage the growth in manufacturing in China. But services is different. Services is, if for example, if we say a good merchandise is, its function is to meet a certain function. Right, certain function. If you're a computer, you want to use internet, it meets this function of using the internet. But service provides an experience. And to provide satisfactory experience, you have to at least overcome, you know, barriers of language, of culture, and many, many other aspects. India, in turn, why it's so successful in the services trade is first because it has advantage in language, which, I mean, English has been very widely used in India. And that's one of the most important factors. And secondly, it's interesting to note that, you know, India is located in a different time zone than US, and it's in the middle of US and Europe. So the BPO, the business processing outsourcing, one of the most interesting examples we raise sometimes is that if you are a hospital in the United States and you want to cut down the cost on filing the files for your patients to do the medical records, one of the business model is that you just scan them and send them to India. And when you shut down for the day, I mean, when it's, the business hour is over in US, it's business hour in India, and they start processing that, and they'll send it back by the opening of the day of business in US. So being located in a different time zone is also an advantage in this case. And also, certainly, there are many other factors which have helped India to become an important player in services trade. One of them is the government attaches great importance to the growth of service sector. So India say that you know, China is the world factory, but will be the world office. That's the target that they set, and they are doing quite well in that regard. And also, the role of the business associations have been very important. The NASSCOM of India, which is a business association in the IT sector in India, has about over 1,000 members, and it's doing a lot of huge campaigns worldwide to promote the services, Indian services, IT services. And sometimes I think it's important to, you know, have such kind of strategies. If we like, if you watch CNN, sometimes you see this advertisements by National Board of Tourism or National Tourism Agencies, like all these phrases that we can remember, you know, Incredible India or Malaysia Truly Asia. So the national government are investing in this kind of campaigns to promote its services trade.
Very good. I just was thinking here, listening to you, that you didn't actually mention any countries we could call kind of the Western and developed countries. And then my question is that, is it so that the new developing countries have some kind of advantage before the old ones, as they are really open to the new ideas, open to the new possibilities, and more eager to develop? And the developed countries already have a very, let's say, a high comparison base, so it's difficult to jump from the levels where they are. Or is it something to do with the mindsets of the country, also how they think, or how does it feel?
I think if we look at the figures and data, international trade is still predominantly dominated, especially the export of services trade is still dominated by developed countries. If we take a look at the top exporters, it's US is number one, second is UK, third is Germany. Fourth is France, China is fifth, and India is number six. And among the top 30 exporters of services trade, there are only a few, very limited few number of countries which are developing countries. So in that regard, the developed countries still have the most powerful places in the international services trade, and then that's also understandable because services trade would very much depend on innovation and technological developments. So that's at the core of the competitiveness of the services trade. And in terms of other factors, I think it's difficult to compare because they differ from country to country. For example, like I said, the Indian BPO and the IT outsourcing market mainly serve the US and mainly serve the US because of their language. And for example, the BPO market in China would mainly serve Japanese and Korean markets because, you know, they share a bit of more common in the language or the culture or mindset. So, but still, despite the fact that developing countries have been catching up very rapidly in terms of services trade, nowadays the international services trade is still pretty much dominated by developed countries. And also that's one of the reasons why in international trade negotiations where, you know, countries trade to open up the service sector, the developing countries say that, you know, we're the importers of the services and you are exporters. And if we open up more, the developed countries would benefit more from the opening up of the services markets.
Can you tell us, if we take, for example, Estonia and consider that we have only about 700,000 employers,
small employees.
Sorry. And sometimes we're telling to each other that we have no great future as exporters because we don't have mass enough people to do the hard work to produce something. And then we are turning to another place and we call them startups, and then we have many, many hundreds and hundreds of startup companies. Sometimes I see them also as a service providers. Sometimes they are trying to produce something. But my question to you is, what should the small country who understands that they don't have enough employees to do?
Okay. Well,
how to grow?
Yes, that's a very, very, very great question. I think if we look at the landscape of the international economy, you would find that many, many countries that are, which are very competitive in international trade are actually small and open economies. And outside Singapore, for example, its trade to GDP ratio is over 100%. Hong Kong is same. So all of these small open economies are doing pretty well. Also, Switzerland is also another case. So it's not true that, you know, if you have a smaller workforce and if you, then you'll be, it will be difficult to be engaged in international trade. It's actually quite contrary because of the limited workforce. You would not, for example, want to engage in very labor-intensive manufacturing export. You would wish to move more to higher value-added services trade. So actually, services trade presents great opportunities to the economies with a smaller workforce. So that's why also I think that it's important to advocate this idea of trading services for the countries like, for example, Estonia, because like you have correctly pointed out, some manufacturing would require a big, very big population to support that. For example, the production bases in China. I think there's a very good example, which I have no linkages with Apple, but they just always give very good examples. the Apple company produces its iPhone in Shenzhen in China, and there's one case where I think Steve Jobs was asked by the U.S. president, why don't you bring back all of these companies to US, and we'll have US workers, you know, have their jobs. And Jobs said it's not possible. Why it's not possible? Because it's one of the examples is that they changed a design in iPhone, and the shipment date is very close, 3 days or less than a week. So actually the factory had to like wake up 8,000 workers during the middle of the night, 8,000 workers in one factory, and train them and you know, to work on this new product. So basically, for some manufacturing, especially labor-intensive ones, that needs a bit of larger population and a larger workforce to deal with. But services trade is different. Most of the a majority of the companies in services trade are SMEs. You could, you know, have a startup with less than five people to provide a service. And many of the service companies are indeed started very, very small, with few people. As long as you have a good idea and you have, you know, sorted out with all the development strategies and financing issues, and also marketing and all business-related activities. So that's why I think indeed in trading services presents a great opportunity for small and medium-sized companies and countries with a relatively smaller workforce.
That is exactly what we need here.
we just don't know how to get it, but
yeah, that's true. But we need to strive for.
I don't have any. Like, you know, a prescription or whatever. I'm just thinking that, you know, one of the factors which is important is services is about ideas, is about the experiences. So to, you know, generate these ideas, the country needs to be open to the ideas from other countries. For example, I mean, it's very, especially for the internet companies, internet-based service, it's very easy to start a service which is similar to the one which is already being successfully supplied in the market in other countries. You know, I mean, many suppliers in many countries do that. If you have a successful model of calling a taxi on your mobile phone, I guess there are also companies which are developing this software in your own language in to serve the local market, which is a pretty fair thing. So opening up to the ideas, to information flow, to the being more connected to the outside world does help, and it's an important factor to help the services sector to grow.
Good. I also wanted to ask do you have any suggestions for government? What should the government do in order to encourage companies to participate more in international trade?
Please do
trade?
Export services.
Well, how can they support, or if you have any good examples or role models? To look at? Who has done something exceptionally good?
Yeah, I think the role of government will be quite important in fostering the export capacities of services companies. Why is that? Because first of all, many successful service exporters are already successful in their domestic market. So a very healthy and good and strong domestic service sector would be essential for the companies to engage in international business. The companies usually start with their domestic companies. I mean, there are companies which are, would start with targeting the international market, you know, the IT BPO companies, but many service companies would start from supplying the domestic market, then expand to other markets. You know, if you are express delivery company, if you are very successful, you start with the express delivery among the cities in Estonia, and then later you could expand to provide you know, deliveries to other European cities or across the oceans. So the domestic service market will be very important, and the government has the role to play in that. It needs to ensure a fair playing ground. You know, its policies needs to nurture the growth of the service sector and not to restrict it. Why the service is different? Because services are, in many cases, they are affected by the regulations. For example, the regulations on what type of companies can be engaged in what kind of business, how you do business, and also, for example, on whether the foreign companies will be allowed to enter the market, and then how a sector is regulated. So indeed, the government has a big role to play in it, and we always say that the government should be aware of what services trade is and its potential. Then when they are formulating their growth strategies, development plans, or sectoral regulations, they would bear in mind that this service sector may not only serve its domestic market, but it could have export potential in the future. And also, secondly, I think as the case we have been mentioned before, that the industrial associations or business associations would also have a big role to play. You know, sometimes you just need some synergy to bring the companies together to advocate a national brand, you know, like Incredible India, or India is the place where you go to look for BPO services. That kind of national branding strategy would also be very important. And also, finally, I think one of the responsibilities of the government is to provide good education, because talents, professionals are essential part of services trade. And basically, it's people is in the root of all business, and how do you invest in education would define how the country or business would grow in next 10 or 20 years. And I think in that regard, Estonia is doing very well. I've looked at the OECD data, and Estonia has one of the highest rankings on education among 34 OECD countries. It's second on science and fifth on maths. So I guess
we have hope.
Well, it's great growth potential. And also there are other indicators which indicate that like the OECD CRI index, which is trying to sort of predict the growth path over the next 9 to 6 months. It's looking very good for Estonia as well. It's you're actually the third on the CRI index. So economic prospects are very great for the country.
Very good. I have my last question. We always ask it. And my question is that what could an Estonian food producer learn from trade in services? We especially ask the question because we ask it almost in every our marketing radio talk show, because after the problem with Russia, where that was one of our biggest export markets for the food products, then we want to find out that what are the other ideas, what they should do, how they should compensate the loss of the export in Russia, or if there are any other ideas what they should learn from the trade in services, as we talk today.
Yes, when I saw this question, I think, you know, it's...
You thought
it's
a was a mistake.
I thought it's just to make the talk show more interesting. And indeed, it's a quite interesting question. I mean, how would you associate food producers from service with service trade and service providers? And in one thing that I was thinking about is that... we have to go to this model of the global value chains, you know, this smiley face of how business are, where the value added are. So as you may know, that the both ends of the smiley curve where are the areas where the most profitable businesses, and most of them are services. And manufacturing and primary goods are in the middle, and they are sort of produce less value added. So for a food producer in Estonia, certainly if you want to diversify, if you want to gain more value added, you would need to go to the two sides of the curve. The one side is the R&D. You could invest in R&D and improve your products, invest in the design, packaging, you know, have better looking packages, which is a packaging is a service. And also on the other side, you could find the innovative ways to engage in sales, you know, to sales and marketing. For example, if you're selling to a wholesaler, then you could try to think of establishing your own website, starting your own brand, you know, distinguish your product from others. Those things would add much more value added to the products that you have. And since we are living in the internet age, I guess, you know, if you're a serious company, you would need to have your own website to advertise, to, you know, to just to do a bit of branding, which is so very important in distinguishing your product from others and giving a bit of more value added to that.
Yeah, or there is another possibility that you found, you create an IT program that helps you and the others to monitor how the bacteria in the yogurt are growing and to manage the process in the best way and to license the program for other companies who are producing yogurts.
Yeah, exactly. And then you're turning from a yogurt producer, which is in the primary sector, to a science and high-tech company, which is also classified as service sectors.